1, 2, 1, 2. Testing. Welcome, everybody. This is Brian Taylor, and I'm here doing an ADA podcast with Dr. Lisa Hunter. Dr. Hunter is the Scientific Director of Audiology and the Associate Professor of Otolaryngology and Communication Sciences and Disorders at the University of Cincinnati. Dr. Hunter is also the chair of the Accreditation Commission for Audiology Education, otherwise known as the ACAE. And I'd like to welcome Dr. Lisa Hunter to the podcast today.
Thank you so much, Brian. It's really a pleasure to be here with you.
So the objective of our podcast today is for you to kind of give us a little bit more information about the importance of ACAE and the overall mission. So, Dr. Hunter, my first question to you is for you to explain what ACAE is and what it does for audiologists.
Sure. That's a great place to start, because I think when all of us who are audiologists were getting our, whether it was a master's or a doctorate in audiology later on, we probably were only vaguely aware of accreditation, if at all. And accreditation is really an important process, because it's what makes sure that the program is providing the kind of education to students that it must. And so ACAE is a newer accreditation body that was developed specifically for audiology. So the other accreditation body is the CAA, which is connected with ASHA, and it's now semi-independent of ASHA, but it is, of course, shared between speech pathology and audiology. And there was a very strong feeling among a lot of audiologists that we really needed to be in charge of our own futures with regard to how we educate and train our students, and that we really wanted to make decisions for ourselves. It goes right along with professional autonomy. So that was the reason why ACAE was developed 10 years ago and has developed over the last 10 years to become really an incredibly innovative and high-quality program for ensuring that our AUD programs are doing what they should to educate students to the highest level that's needed for practice.
Could you tell us a little bit more about why ACAE might be a better choice compared to the other accreditation body?
Well, that's a great question, because when you look at the standards on paper, they don't look very different. You know, of course, both accrediting bodies cover the scope of practice. I've been at the other side, being a faculty member and having accreditation be done through CAA, and I've also gone to site visits under ACAE. And I was really struck by the very different approach that ACAE takes. ACAE takes an approach that they want the program to be the very best that it can be. Accreditation programs, I don't think, are very successful. And, you know, this is not any one particular accreditation, but the old-fashioned way is to go in kind of as a policing or gotcha sort of system, whereas what we want to do is we want to ensure that the program is indeed meeting all the standards, but then go beyond that to help that program really play to its strengths, the things that make it unique, and then really find any weaknesses and help them to figure out how those weaknesses can be improved so that they are doing the very best job they can across the whole scope of practice. And what we also have done with ACAE is that we were the first system in the world, actually, to develop a fully electronic benchmarked system for audiology education. And it was developed through a company called Liaison International, which is based in Boston. And they helped us to develop this electronic system over the last 10 years. And we are now in our sort of third version of that, and we've extensively beta tested it with programs and are continually improving it. And we feel that we've been developing everything from the ground up so that it specifically is designed for audiology to really make those programs the very best they can be.
I got it. Well, that's excellent background information. I thought we could step back, and my next question is really addressing the why. You know, why should the average audiologist or an ADA member even care about accreditation?
That's a great question. It really comes down to a very simple concept. It's all about professionalism, autonomy, and access to qualified audiologists for the public. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about that at AAA and ADA, how we want to get to more autonomy for the profession and even to the extent of limited licensed practitioner status, which I know ADA cares deeply about and has submitted a new bill to try to get that approved. But we really have to have the burden of proof on the profession that it has the standards that will allow us to be successful in achieving something like limited licensed practitioner status. The accreditation requirements must meet the standard required for professional excellence and national consistency. If we fail there, then it dooms the effort down the road, so that it's sort of putting the cart before the horse. If we haven't been training our students under that kind of a model, then they're not going to be able to compete for those sorts of positions and for independent practice, and will fail to be successful at that. And we as a profession will have failed if we're not doing that from the get-go, so that students are learning that sort of mindset, that sort of way of practice from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Well, would it be fair to say that accreditation is the equivalent of having high standards or ensuring high standards from the ground up when a student enters a program?
Absolutely, because otherwise what you do is if you don't have those standards in that way of educating students, then we're back to the old approach where we had the CFY and you have on-the-job training and, you know, you hire somebody to join your practice and they have no idea about any of these sorts of things like billing and, you know, accountable care organizations and HIPAA and everything else. And then we have to train them on the job after they graduate. So much better that they have that mindset from the beginning, because whatever they learn in school is going to become outdated very quickly. So we've got to train them that, you know, a fully independent professional takes responsibility for their continuing education and continues it from there.
Okay. I got it. Understood. I know that you were involved in a survey recently. I think it was called the ACAE Stakeholder Survey. And I was wondering if you could share some of the results of that with us.
Oh, I'd love to. This has been really exciting, and I'm so glad that we put the time and effort and work into doing this. And I really want to thank the ADA as one of the partner organizations that we reached out to early to review the stakeholder survey. The whole idea behind it was that we wanted to get a wide range of input from as many stakeholders in audiology as we could. So that includes, of course, practicing audiologists, also includes faculty members, students, audiologists in industry, and we sought input from audiologists from a wide range of practices, and we are really happy that actually the largest group that responded were private practice audiologists. We had over 1,000 responses, and what we were really seeking was input and opinion about what are the most important things we need to be teaching our students, and how are we doing at that. The programs we asked, of the programs that you're most familiar with, you know, that might be the one that you graduated from or one that you maybe take students from or hire students from, how are they doing on these different standards? And we really wanted to get sort of a pulse on that mm-hmm. from a wide range of people.
Well, could you tell us what some of the most relevant findings were?
Sure. When you look at the foundational standards, so some of the basic science ones, we're doing relatively well, but less well on some of the newer kinds of foundations that students need, things like genetics, pharmacology, we were doing less well on. Bigger gaps between what people thought we needed to know or students need to know and what they actually know when they're graduating. But where it really showed up was in these standards that have to do with professionalism, communication, and patient management. This was really where clinicians and faculty and actually students all agreed. We had good consensus that there were very large gaps between what people thought students need to know when they graduate and what they are able to do. So we're using this to help us to update our standards, to really press home how critically important they are, and to really make a point that it requires better partnering between the clinicians who are out in practice and employers and the educators to be teaching what students really need to know in a way that they're going to be able to learn how to use it. Because it's one thing to have, you know, the classroom knowledge, but being able to demonstrate those skills when you get out is a much more difficult thing. Mm-hmm. And it really requires that students are exposed to those high clinical standards of practice from the beginning in their programs.
Mm-hmm. Could you share with us maybe a little more detail about how ACAA would use this survey information? You know, what are some of the next steps as a result of the survey?
Yes, we have a committee that is chaired by Ian Windmill and has a number of really excellent members, some of whom are academic faculty, some of whom are practicing clinicians who accept students for, say, fourth years and so forth. We've got a nice wide range of people on the committee, and they are looking at the stakeholder survey. They're looking at our current standards. They're looking at trends in education. They're also looking at models from other programs. And what they're doing is they're updating our standards. This is a process that we, you know, go through every few years. And it's actually been 10 years since the first ACAE standards were developed. So it's really time for us to take a close look at these, update them, and the stakeholder survey is a piece of that. Now, of course, it's all opinion-based. What we really need are development of better outcomes, ways to measure how students are doing. And that really came through loud and clear through the stakeholder survey. So another piece of this is that we'll be partnering with the Education Committee for AAA to really look at the professional standards that AAA has recently developed and has published for the profession, to make sure that we are covering all of those professional standards in our education standards as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned that it's been 10 years since, I think a lot of audiologists would be surprised that ACA has been around that long. Can you tell us some of the things that you've accomplished over the last decade?
Yeah, we were really happy to celebrate our 10th year. Actually, when we met in AAA in Anaheim, we had a 10th year anniversary party, which was really exciting. And 10 years is a long time, but it's gone by really quickly. I think anyone who's not been involved in accreditation has no idea how complex and how difficult it is to develop an entirely new accrediting body, and especially one that's in competition with another one. You know, we're competing with another accrediting body that's been around for much longer than we have and has a lot more resources than we do. But despite that, we've been able to accomplish a great deal. The first thing that we did is we developed, and I mentioned this earlier, an entirely unique system of electronic accreditation that's now being copied by other programs and by other professions. And it maintains the program's data in an ongoing basis. Mm-hmm. And this eliminates just mountains of paper data that really were put on the shelf to get dusty in the old systems and were never really used to benchmark and improve outcomes. And, you know, I think imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, and we're now seeing that other accrediting bodies are starting to adopt a similar electronic and benchmark system. So that really gives us validation that we were on the right track from the beginning. Uh-huh. And we were the first ones to do it. We beta tested the system with our first two programs, which were Central Michigan University and Washington University in St. Louis. And it worked magnificently for those programs, and we were able to get lots and lots of feedback about how to improve it. And so we applied those improvements with the next two programs that were accredited, which are Nova Southeastern University and the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. And we found that with this wide kind of variety of different types of programs, that this system has really served us well. And the programs then give annual updates. They put in their student outcomes. When we get some more programs on board, you know, we're thinking about 10 programs at least, then we will be able to start providing national benchmarks for how programs are doing.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the four that have become accredited, and then we submitted all of this data in a very extensive report to a body that's called the Council on Higher Education Accreditation, known as CHEA. CHEA is governed by the U.S. Department of Education in the federal government, and that is really needed. It's sort of, they are our accreditors, so they are giving us a rigorous review and stamp of approval that we are doing a good job in terms of how we're accrediting this professional program of audiology.
Well, that's great. You mentioned, and I would assume for these universities, it's a huge leap of faith to go from an old accreditation system that's been around for a while to one that's relatively new. And you mentioned there's four universities that currently have ACAE accreditation. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And how many, are there any others that are in the pipeline or thinking about doing this?
Yes, there are several more in the pipeline. We have three right now that we are reviewing in the self-study process. And so we're very excited that we're starting to get to a critical mass. And as you said, it is a big leap of faith for programs to do this. And people will ask, well, why has it taken so long? And the reason it's taken so long is that programs have to be confident that we are here for the long haul and that we're not going away. And with something as important as accreditation, you're not going to kind of just jump to the newest flavor of the month. It's got to be something that is rigorous, that is recognized by CHEA, and we achieved the CHEA recognition just last year. It takes a long time, and that was a really important milestone for us, and we're suddenly seeing a lot more interest now that we have the CHEA recognition, and now that programs are talking to each other. You know, the programs that we have accredited are talking to other programs and telling them about it, and it's really that word of mouth that builds the confidence that we're doing the right thing. And we want to be the accreditation agency of choice for audiology, not something you have to do, but something you want to do because you want to show that you truly are meeting the best standards you can.
Right. It's good for the profession and good ultimately for consumers, I would imagine. Again, could you mention the four universities that have the accreditation through you?
Yes, the very first one was Central Michigan University, which was quite important because that, as you know, was the first AUD program in audiology. And Dr. Jerry Church, who started the AUD program there, was very committed to ACAE and really wanted to seek accreditation through ACAE. So they were the first program and one of the beta sites. The second, which was also a beta site, was Washington University in St. Louis. And they have a very fine faculty there. It's a highly respected program with great basic science as well as clinical training. And we were thrilled that they also sought accreditation, and both programs were successful. And the third program was Nova Southeastern University, which, as you know, was one of the first AUD programs and has a unique model of interdisciplinary education and clinical training. And then the fourth was the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, another really strong, really fine program. So we've been really thrilled that some of the leading programs in the field have come forward and have sought this accreditation.
That's great. And if you're a private practice audiologist out there looking to hire somebody new, maybe those are four schools that you may want to look first for a new hire. I'm curious, Dr. Hunter, if you look, if you have a crystal ball and you looked into the future over the next 3 to 5 years, where do you see ACAE? Where do you see the profession? What's in your mind going to be happening with accreditation in the field of audiology over the next few years?
Well, I know that you're aware, and many people at ADA are aware, that healthcare is really at a crossroads right now with the Accountable Care Act and the Department of Education expecting its outcomes for both medical reimbursement as well as the Department of Education and what they expect from healthcare practitioners. And it's really about professionalism, but also accessibility and affordability. And those are driving forces behind the move to reform healthcare. So this is something we really need to get on the ball with in audiology and really understand and take advantage of, because we right now have a unique opportunity for non-physician healthcare professions to move to a more autonomous, limited license type of status, mm-hmm. if we can demonstrate that our services increase accessibility and affordability, that is within our scope of practice, because all healthcare practitioners are going to be expected to practice at the top of their scope without sacrificing quality of care. And so the challenge for us in audiology in this real dynamic time of change is to really solidify the audiologist as the hearing imbalance professional, and that can best be done by strong standards that prove that we have the capability to move in the future towards limited license practitioner status.
And what can the typical ADA member do to support your cause?
The ADA members have so much reach and so much, I think, important ability to reach out to educational programs. So programs that you're an alumni of, programs that you want to see, get those outcomes and really show that they are training students to the highest level. Encourage them. Ask them, you know, are you getting ACAE accreditation? We feel this is important for our profession. Let's unite behind it. I think, you know, for the past 20, 25 years, audiology has been a profession at odds with itself. And I think sometimes shooting ourselves in the foot by fighting internally.
Yes.
And we really have to get on the ball, drop those battles, and unite together. And one way that we can do it is uniting behind both accreditation and a professional home for audiology that brings it all together in one place. And I think that if we can start to collaborate, truly collaborate and work together, knowing that we're not going to agree on everything, but knowing that the most important thing is that if we don't show a united front, we will never get anywhere with the government regulators, with Congress. They have to see that we are all united together and that we have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we will not be successful with any of our legislative efforts.
Right, and I would imagine that, if we all are on the same page about having high standards for the way students are trained, that would be an important objective, I would think, for everybody.
Yeah, well, Brian, you get it, and you always have. Every time I've talked to you, you really get this, and I think a lot of people do who really understand, you know, the whole 360 degrees of how the profession works, but it really is a cycle that starts with the student and ends again with that new professional who's going to have the professional responsibility to train the next group of students.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where it starts and ends.
Well, I think that's great advice that you have to lobby your the school, your school, that where you're an alum, to talk to the schools that send you students. You know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, as they say, and this is a good opportunity for us to raise awareness and have those universities, begin the process of working with ACAE for those that haven't.
That's right. And students, too. We're finding students are our biggest advocates. We've got students who are coming to us because they're spending upwards of $100,000 sometimes for their AUD degree, and they want outcomes, and they are seeing that sometimes they're not getting them. And they talk to each other. You know, they.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like, you know, what's happening around the rest of the world. You can't stop people from talking to each other on Facebook and Twitter and everywhere else, and they share information about what their programs are doing and not doing.
Yeah, we live in a very transparent world.
It's a very transparent world, so yes.
That's well, any final comments or any closing statements that you would have for ADA members and other audiologists that might be listening in?
We will be communicating our results. We're going to be putting together an article for ADA. I will be attending ADA in the fall. I'm excited to be there, talking about some clinical types of research. And I have talked also with your board, and we really are reaching our hand out because in a way that wants to partner with ADA. And we hope that we will hear from you, get ideas and thoughts. And I really want to thank ADA for partnering with us on the stakeholder survey. It's given us very valuable information.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Lisa Hunter from the University of Cincinnati and the chair of ACAE, I want to thank you for taking a half hour and sharing your insights with us.
Thank you so much for your time, Brian.